Listen and earn to the Profit Express with your host, Tim Healy. For over a decade, Tim has helped the Long Island business community create sales systems through sales system development, training, and coaching. Tim is also the president and owner of Healy Success Solutions. Get ready as we create big-time profits for your business today. Now, here's your host, Tim Healy.
Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy. And you're invited to join me each and every week as we tackle the hottest stories, topics, and trends facing you. That's right, you, today's entrepreneur, today's small business owner. And we do it right here on the Profit Express on 88.7 FM, WRHU. So thanks for being on board today. And while you're on Facebook, if you want to check out the show and follow guests and give us a thumbs up, maybe a thumbs down, go to the Profit Express page. Let us know what you think about today's show and guests you'd love to see on the show as well. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow me and the show at Radio Tim Healy. That's at Radio Tim Healy. Now, for today's bottom line benefit, which is going to go on a little earlier today, because I think the Islanders are on after me, correct, Anders? Islanders, right?
That is correct.
That is correct. Okay, so we're preempted it by about 10 minutes. So at 6:35, we're going to have the bottom line benefit, and you can hear none other than the fat guy himself, Mr. Tom Jacoberger, owner of Fat Guy Media, located in Mineola, New York. And Tom will be sharing, as he always does, the very latest in online marketing and media strategies. And tonight, he and I will discuss the power of blogging and how you can turn your content into cash. That's right, so keep it tuned to 88.7 FM, WRHU. So thank you for listening. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now, if you are a baby boomer, and I know I got a lot of baby boomers listening to the show, and if you're a baby boomer who's been downsized, and you're too young to retire, what's your next move? Are you going to get another job? Do you really want to go back to corporate America for another 9-to-5-er? Maybe you do. Or maybe something inside of you is telling you just it's time for something different, time for a different approach. Have you ever considered owning your own business? What about a franchise? Well, why should you consider a franchise? Well, actually, there's lots of reasons. According to the IFA, which is the International Franchise Association, did you know that for the past 5 years, the average annual job growth in the franchise sector was 2.6%, nearly 20% higher than all businesses economy-wide? And over the last 5 years, the franchising sector has added nearly a million jobs to the economy. And in 2015, franchise output grew 5.6%. And the IFA goes on to say that they see further improvement in the pace of growth of the franchising sector in 2016 as consumer spending remains strong and businesses and their spending accelerates as well. And something of interest to baby boomers listening, and I thought this was pretty interesting. Since 2008, which is only about 8 years ago, obviously, the average age for buying into a franchise was 42. And in those 8 years, it's been creeping up year after year. Now, the average age is now 56 as of 2015. But hey, there are a lot of factors to consider and questions to ask, because if franchising isn't right for you, or if you choose the wrong one, it could be a huge disaster. So you think, okay, well, Tim, I've been downsized. I don't want to go back to working for a corporate America in a 9-to-5-er. How do I determine if franchising is right for me? That's a great question. Well, you can start by talking to an expert, and that's who I'm about to introduce you to right here in the Profit Express, because I'm welcoming back to the show Tom Scarta, who's the author of the number one bestseller, Franchise Savvy, Six Strategies Pros Use to Pick Top-Performing Franchises. And Tom is also an expert whose own purchase of a franchise allowed him to semi-retire at the tender age of 41. And now Tom has been helping people figure out if franchising is right for them. He's been doing it for the past 10 years. So you all know I love franchising as a topic. It's a hugely important sector in the economy. And I want to talk about it today. And I'm glad to have Tom back on the show. So welcome aboard, Tom.
Well, thank you, Tim. It's awesome to be here again.
Yes, it's great to have you. I love having guests back, and certainly expert guests like yourself, you know, lending some credibility to a show like mine, getting people like you on. You know what I'm saying?
I know. I'm totally grateful for being here and you allowing me on the show. This is a great thing.
Absolutely. Well, you're very welcome. Now, the new book out, again, is Franchise Savvy, Six Strategies Pros Use to Pick Top-Performing Franchises. And there's even some franchise trivia in it in the very beginning, which I really liked. It's a light read, but it's a book that's got a lot of very, very useful information and eye-opening information for people who are considering the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to make it an easy read because I'm an easy reader, so I like a lot of words and pictures. That's the kind of books I like. Big words.
But hey, you know what? I mean, people, we're a skimming society. You know, we don't need a 400-page book to tell a message.
That's true.
You know? Now, you were in a career, for people who don't know, you were in a career in the New York City Transit Authority. You were one of those subway conductors, right?
Right.
You were, you know, the person who screamed out the messages you could never understand, right?
For some reason, it never worked.
Right. And so, you know, obviously a job for New York City Transit Authority, what does it offer? You got stability. It's a career path. But actually, it's a very funny story. It was your desire to wear a silk shirt that changed your mind. A silk shirt.
It's funny, yeah.
Not just any shirt, a silk shirt. Can you tell the story of how that led to franchising for you?
Yeah, it's, you know, I didn't know I really wanted to wear a silk shirt, but I was a conductor, and I loved, you know, moving 5 million people a day, being the cog in that whole thing, and I love the people I work with, and I love New York City, so It was really great doing that. And one day there was an old timer there who looked like he was there since the subway opened up in 1904. He was all grizzly and you know, sitting there, and he was kind of holding court in the lunchroom, and he said to me, "Hey kid, this is a great job." And you know, I was 23 at the time. He said, "You know, you'll always have a shirt on your back, and it'll never be a silk shirt, but you'll always have a shirt." I said, "Bam! Wow, that was like a bucket of cold water." I'm like, "Wow, you know, I'm working like crazy hours, and I have Tuesday and Wednesday off, and vacation time that nobody wants, and so I'm stuck with that." And you know, do I see the light at the end of the tunnel? And what I realized is that the lifestyle I wanted to live was really portrayed and illustrated by business owners, and that, you know, I knew nothing from business. And after some hard thought and, you know, talking with my wife and everything, we figured out that a franchise is a business with training wheels. And that's what I needed. I needed that support, the help, because I knew squat. I was a government worker, you know.
Right. You didn't have exposure for it. Did you go to school for business or?
No, not at all. I was, you know, liberal arts in Kingsborough Community College in Brooklyn.
So you weren't necessarily prepared to be the quote-unquote business owner.
No, not at all. I had no idea what a P&L was. Nothing.
all important things, of course. So you're hearing that grizzly veteran tell the story that, yeah, it's a great, you know, secure job. You'll always have a job. You'll always have a shirt on your back. Which for a lot of people is a great thing, okay, but not for everybody.
That's right.
You know, so you decided that the lifestyle you wanted to lead was more along the lines of a business owner.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, we all know we could be business owners in a lot of different ways and varieties. You chose the route of franchising. What impact has it had now looking back on you, your life, your family?
You know, I don't think there's enough time in the show to talk about the positive impacts that it had. But, you know, what comes to mind as you say that is really the fact that I thought that I was just helping myself and my family back then. And it turned out that I was helping so many people. You know, every time you open up a franchise, an average of 20 jobs are created in the neighborhood. So I was able to put these mostly young people to work and help them have, you know, a great time, a great little job, and a fun job. And just the ripple effect of that, I never really understood and until, you know, later years. And, you know, people met at my business and were friends, and one couple got married. And it was like, it's amazing, like that kind of, if I didn't open up that franchise, there's a chance that would have never happened.
Right, right. Now, what was the franchise, by the way? I don't think we mentioned it yet.
Oh, yeah. The franchise was something called Maui Wowie Smoothies.
Right.
So everybody thought I was crazy, living the pension for Maui Wowie. Are you crazy?
I saw one of the pictures of you back in the day with some Hawaiian shirt on at the stand, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the deal. It was a Hawaiian motif.
Sure.
So they had these funky shirts we wore, and I think they were really funky and bright to hide all the smoothie mix that splashed all over us every day.
Exactly. So it obviously had a huge impact on you and your family, of course. Now, when did you had... When was your first year in the franchise? When did you start?
Yes. You know, we bought the franchise at the end of 2000.
Okay.
And the first gig we got was the Jacob Javits Convention Center in Manhattan. We got a spot there, and that was a blessing. And
not a bad gig.
No, it was great, and it was just a cold call from me. You know, again, knowing nothing, I'm like a conductor, and I send in this information, and I call, and the lady who answers the phone says, "Oh, we have smoothies in the building that they probably won't call you back." And this gentleman, I talk about him in the book, Greg Fainer, who's a Long Islander, called me, and he said, "Hey, this is a great little concept. Come in and give it a shot." So it was January 2001. We did the boat show.
Okay.
If you're a boater, you've probably been to the boat show at the Javits Center.
Sure.
And it turned out to be great. And he said, "You want to do another gig?" And we're like, "Yeah, we'll do another show." And at that time, I was still with the Transit Authority. Actually, at that point, I had transferred to Long Island Railroad to make the record straight. And I was working for the communications section and public affairs there. And one show after another, and it was going really, really well. And then in April of 2001, we did the International Auto Show there.
Really?
And that show, they put, the numbers are probably higher now, but 1.1 million people through the building in 8 days. And that week,
wow,
in 8 days, we grossed essentially almost exactly what I used to make per year at the Transit Authority. So I was like, okay, maybe I need to.
So you might be onto something.
Yeah, I was like, this might be good. And then from there, you know, for the Long Islanders listening, then from there I got called by Jones Beach Amphitheater and Clear Channel Entertainment, which is now Live Nation.
Sure.
And they asked me to put in two units, and we had two spots over there at Jones Beach. And then the friends from Nassau Coliseum asked us to come in, and we were doing...
Now, were you cold calling these venues, or did they reach out to you?
I was cold calling them.
You were cold calling. Yeah. All right.
It was just... And it became word of mouth, and then...
Right. Okay, so you had a little bit of... You know, you were doing some work in the Jacob Javits, so you had, you know, some credibility behind you.
Right. And the credibility, and the reason I got into the Javits Center, Greg would tell you at the beginning, was because I was a franchise. He knew I wasn't going to come in here and jerk around and...
Right.
Whatever.
So there's some stability, you know, with the franchise model.
Right.
Okay.
He felt like, you know, this guy's the real deal. He's putting down, you know, thousands of dollars. I mean, the whole investment on something like that was only $70,000
right
then, which was everything I had plus more at that time. And it was a major risk. And that's,
sure,
that's the decision. You know, as I talk about all the time, and you've heard me talk about this before, you know, the decision is never the franchise you're going to buy, but the decision always comes down to the choice between uncertainty and unhappiness. That's what it comes down to. All right.
Uncertainty and unhappiness.
That's the choice every time.
So, all right. So now somebody just heard that. It's not the franchise you choose. It's uncertainty and unhappiness. What do you mean by that?
So what I mean is, you know, there's great franchises. It's,
sure,
not difficult to help you find the right franchise. That'll take a few weeks. It'll, mm-hmm, be exciting. But when you get down to the nitty-gritty of,
right,
you know, writing a check for a franchise fee and, mm-hmm, you're buying an idea.
Right.
You know, it's just simply an idea. It's like, is this going to work for me? So the choice becomes, do I do this and choose uncertainty? And that's where the magic happens. And that's where great things happen. Or do I choose unhappiness and go back to the stupid boss and the long commute and being away from the kids during soccer games because I have to be on a plane and do another report that, you know, the boss is not going to read.
Right,
you know?
Right. Now, it's funny because you talk about uncertainty and unhappiness. And in the book, you talk about a person's reason why they want to open a franchise.
Right.
So why is that, you know, their why factor, their compelling reason? Why is that so important when opening a franchise?
Well, you know, because you're a business guru yourself, so you got to have a why.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a compelling reason to change.
Yeah.
If you or just angry one day and you Google, you know, best franchises or whatever, when it comes down to the nitty gritty and you have to, you know, write a check for a franchise fee, which is equal to a down payment on a house.
Sure.
You know, you're not going to do it if you don't have the why. And all you're doing is spinning your wheels and wasting your time and other people's time. But if you have a compelling reason to change, then you could change your life, right? I mean, there's two different types of change, right? I talk to people every day that get laid off. So right. They were thrown into change. Other people raise their hand and say, I'm done with this nonsense and I'm doing...
This is more of a voluntary change as opposed to it's been imposed upon you.
Right.
So what I'm getting, and I don't want to underestimate the importance of this, but you just mentioned a little earlier, it's not so much the franchise, the product or the service necessarily, but why you're getting into it. That's going to help dictate a lot of its potential success. Am I getting that right?
Well, I think that's probably true because there's a lot of people that buy into a franchise because they're like, oh, this is a great concept and I've done well in whatever I've done and I have an extra, you know, 100, 200,000 I'm going to throw it at this franchise. You know, you're not going to be successful.
Right. As you're telling the story, it doesn't sound like it's going to end up well.
Right, right. Or even given, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to buy the franchise for my son. My son will run it.
Oh,
no, he's not going to.
That's got disaster written all over it. Now, again, folks, it's the Profit Express right here at 88.7 FM WRHU. If you're a baby boomer listening, if you've just been downsized, or maybe if you're just sick and tired of what corporate America has meant to you over the past 20 or so years, and maybe you're looking for an investment opportunity, something different to do with your life, we're talking about franchising. You know what? It's an opportunity for a lot of people. And, you know, today's guest is Tom Scardi. He's back on the show. He's a franchise expert, and he's also an author. And his latest book is Franchise Savvy, 6 Strategies Pros Use to Pick Top-Performing Franchises. Now, in the beginning of the book, as I said, this is a really interesting, fun read, which has a lot of very, very useful and impactful information. One of the fun things is, let me just go to the franchise trivia. You know, you think, oh, trivia, you know, franchises rather, you know, what is it about? You know, people think franchises, they think, oh, it's Dunkin' Donuts, it's McDonald's, Subway, so on and so forth. But franchising is a very serious sector in the economy in America. Did you know, and this is the trivia in the book here, that the economic output of the franchise industry annually here in America is $2.1 trillion with a T. $2.1 trillion.
That's amazing.
Here's another number. 18 million. That's the number of people employed by a franchise operation nationwide. The franchise industry is the second largest employer by industry, second only to the U.S. Armed Forces.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's amazing. Now, in the book, Tom, you talk about passion, okay, is one of the strategies that you mentioned in the book. So should people necessarily follow their passion when opening a franchise?
No, that's a question that I probably get asked on a daily basis. And there's a misnomer out there because, you know, we all heard the phrase, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah, follow your passion, Right, right.
And that's definitely effective for somebody that's looking for a job where you're working for somebody else because mm-hmm. it's going to really stink if you don't like what you're doing.
Right.
So if you love what you're doing and it's in something, you know, then that's cool and somebody's paying you. But if you are going to, if you're going to start a business or buy a franchise and, you know, just say, hey, you know, people tell me all the time I'm a great baker, mm-hmm. and I should open up a bakery. And I love baking, so I know I'm going to be successful. That usually fails because people, you know, you're a baker, you're not a business person.
Right.
Just because you have a passion for baking doesn't mean that it's going to be a great thing when you have to get up at, you know, 5 in the morning on a Sunday to go make.
Exactly.
You know. So you got to really... You really should get into a business that will give you all the time and the money in the world so you can bake to your heart's content or do whatever it is that your passion and hobbies and whatever.
So it's not necessarily following the passion thing, because that could be a bad business decision for you.
And it usually turns into a bad business decision.
Right.
I mean, you can't hate it either. I mean, if you're a vegetarian, you probably shouldn't buy a hamburger franchise. You know, it's just things like that.
It's too much of a conflict, right? Exactly. So what... When you talk to people who are you know, clients of yours, potential clients, what are the 2 or 3 most common mistakes that people make in the vetting process to determine a franchise?
Well, it usually starts with the original thing that they're looking for. A lot of people feel that, you know, like we talked about passion, and that's kind of a pitfall, following your passion.
Mm.
Another thing is brand names. People are like, oh, it's a franchise, it has to be a brand name, and if I buy a brand name, I can't fail. And that's not true. You can buy a Subway and you still can fail.
You can
be a McDonald's and you still could fail. So you don't have to necessarily go after the brand name. And, you know, there's more than 3,500 franchises out there in 90 different industries. 89 of those industries have nothing to do with food. So you'd be surprised that the things you could do that might kind of maybe touch on your passion, or at least help you be around that industry, and you could do it, and it's inexpensive. Like, a business misnomer is that you need $1 million to start a franchise.
Right.
Absolutely not true. I mean,
I would say probably for most of them you don't, because everybody thinks franchising, they think the big marquee names like the McDonald's,
right,
or the Subway, Dunkin' Donuts, where they're obviously the bigger investments, of course.
Right. But there's a million things out there that people need every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a service. You could run it out of your home, even.
Some of them, yeah.
And you could make a lot of money, and you could help people and, you know, fulfill your passion that way and make a lot of money and have time so you could give to your church and do, you know, the things that you want to do.
Create that lifestyle you're looking for.
Right.
I mean, my son is in daycare. It's a franchise, the learning experience.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's a pretty big one from what I understand.
Yeah, they do pretty well, you know.
Yeah, from the fees I pay, they should do pretty well.
Yeah, no, they do well.
Do you have some time to stick around?
I'm going to be here. Yes.
All right, good. Up next, it's the Prophet Express right here on 88.7 FM WRHU. Today's guest is Tom Scarter. He's a franchising expert, and he's a best-selling author. His new book is Franchise Savvy. And when we're up next, we're going to talk with Tom about the impact of the minimum wage on franchises. Don't go anywhere.